Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The University of Tulsa theater season opens with a musical that's more like a musical review that truly evokes an era. Beehive the Musical by Larry Gallagher, which was written in the early 80s, was one of the first musicals slash reviews, which later became known as a genre by the name of jukebox musicals, which took existing popular music and put them into a theatrical form. In Beehive the Musical features 40 songs from the 1960s that celebrate female singers from the beginning of the decade with the Chiffons, the Shirelles, and the Supremes to Tina Turner, Cher, Aretha Franklin, and Janis Joplin by the end of the decade. Beehive takes place this Thursday through Saturday at 8 o'clock and Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock at the Lorton Performance Center on the University of Tulsa campus. I'm joined today by theater faculty members Michael Wright and Michelle Miller-Dill, who are co-directing the musical. Michael and Michelle, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about Beehive. It's a jukebox musical. That's sort of the genre name, although it may be almost like a music review in some ways.
I think music review is probably more accurate. Yeah, I think the jukebox concept typically focuses maybe on one artist or on one group in particular, but this really focuses on the music of the early 60s, the girl groups, as it were, and then the mid-60s with the British invasion and whatnot, and then the late 60s with the powerhouse solo singers like Janis and Aretha.
Mm-hmm. Well, Michelle, tell us, what went into the decision of putting this material? Because I know as teachers, you like to expose your students to everything from Shakespeare to British sex farce to really serious musicals to something that's probably a little more frothy like this one.
Right, and this is very different than Spring Awakening, which is what we did in the spring, about as polar opposite as one can get. They haven't had a lot of experience doing the review format, and reviews, I think, are much more difficult than book musicals in that there's not really a through line, there's not really a plot, and if you try to impose one on it, you've missed the whole point of the genre. This, I would say, is more of a tour through a historically very important time in American history. It includes the British invasion, but that's the British invasion as seen through the eyes of Americans. And so if you look at the girl groups, you start off with things like the Shirelles and the Chiffons. You're talking about the difference between starting with the Madonna mother, like Ward and June Cleaver. So you start off with June Cleaver, and you end up with Earth Mother, which is Janis Joplin and Cher and those types of women. So you see the growth in women's liberation through the eyes of history, and each time a girl group comes on, you can pinpoint what's going on in the history of our nation. There's one song that starts off, and I won't talk about the song, but the girl group comes on, and the preface is, it's 1963, and this happened, and then Kennedy gets shot, and my whole world changes. I was sitting in algebra class, and I didn't want to be sitting in algebra class, and all of a sudden this changed. My world changed today.
Now, I want to get back to something you were talking about, saying this is somewhat more difficult to do than a book musical. Why is that? Is it because you really don't have the character development, you just have to sell the moment?
Yes, exactly. I told the women in the show that the best way to think about this for at least our development of the show was we are a group who happens to be performing in Las Vegas at the moment. So we're doing this show. What's been interesting to watch is that Michelle came on originally as choreographer and then saved my sorry bones by becoming co-director because I'm just not a musical theater person at all. And so I didn't recognize some of these issues. What we needed to help them develop was a sense of telling a story through each song. So they're delivering each song. They're really kind of creating a small, like a microcosm, if you will, through each song. So there's that. The other thing that I thought was interesting throughout, or that I have found interesting rather throughout, is simply the fact that every song is very, very complex. They may seem simple, you know, from the early 60s, like la-di-da-di-da, but actually there's a lot going on in those songs, the harmonies and the rhythms and the cutoffs at the ends of lines and stuff. So it's been a huge learning curve for me. I've really enjoyed it.
Now, were you searching for something, a greater story at the beginning?
No, never. No, I saw it for, I think, exactly what it is, which is that we're looking at the girl groups of the early 60s. We're looking at some of the performers in the late 60s. What I talked to the women about more than anything else was the fact that this is one decade that's about three decades long in terms of what has happened throughout that time period. And we've looked at some materials. I showed them some videos and some clips from films and so forth, just to give them a little sense of historical context, but also just the performance quality and style, because it's quite different today. We've had a real interesting time teaching them how to sing rock and roll and to not do Beyoncé-style singing when they're trying to do Aretha-style singing. And it's actually been, for me, it's been quite a learning curve. I've really enjoyed a lot of it.
I think it's one of the interesting things, Michelle, is the fact that this material has been interpreted, reinterpreted, reformatted, revisited over 50 years now. And, you know, going back to the 1960s itself is sort of revelatory in a way, because a lot of this material has been transformed over the years.
I think one of the tricks has been to not have the young women portray body and soul the people that they're doing. You know, we don't want Janis Joplin up there, but we want an essence of what Janis was about. And there's been a lot of talk of her pain and what she was trying to say and why she had to perform drunk and why all these things. And what's been nice is that Michael, I don't think he'll mind me calling him out on his age, but he remembers the 60s. I was born in the 60s, but I was a baby, so I don't remember the 60s. So it's been eye-opening for our cast, number one, to realize we were ever young.
Right.
And that we actually we were actually their age once. But to connect things that were going on in that time period with things that are going on in their lives today, and to realize they're really not that much different, and then put it in historical context. And then the style of singing is different. It's still born from the same pain and mm-hmm. the same wants and desires and yearning. But nowadays, there's a different style of rock singing. I'm using air quotes. It's more pop singing, where there's scoops and vibrato and vocal pyrotechnics. And back in the day, Tina Turner didn't need to do that because she was Tina Turner.
Right.
And if you have the essence of Tina Turner or the essence of Aretha or the essence of Janis Joplin, and you're just there simply evoking and sharing your pain or your joy or your passion, that's enough in those songs.
I was struck by something you said about Janis Joplin. It's like, yes, there was all this pain, but there was also, it was an era of all of a sudden you could perform in that fashion, inebriated or whatever, in the 1960s, which you really couldn't do 10 years before.
Absolutely, absolutely. And one thing I want to take up from some stuff that Michelle just said is, you know, I chose not to listen to the soundtrack of the show because I don't like to do that anyway. I'm not there to mimic somebody else's stuff. But what I did hear when we were using it in rehearsal one night is that I felt that they kind of commented on the styles and the songs of the era a little bit, commented by maybe being a little bit cartoonish about it. And we've tried to avoid anything like that. We're really serving the music of the era and the stylists of the era, and all the things that Michelle said about the differences between the singing then and the singing now, not to necessarily say the singing now is not as good, but certainly it was just a different style of delivery. And I should say, I do remember vividly the early 60s. The late 60s got a little foggy.
Well, and that's real music education right there, because what's happening in the early 60s is really based out of what I call pop music, but what we would call the Great American Songbook and early 50s
right.
Sort of standard pop. And so that's where they're coming from. And I think for people who think of, say, even just the Shirelles and the Supremes, they think of this as being a totally different thing. But what formed their musical background was what had come a decade earlier.
Well, if you look at it, the musicality of the Shirelles and even the Supremes, the tight harmonies, it's not bubblegum pop the way that we have today, but it was very easy to listen to, easy to understand, much more easy to understand. And I don't mean to denigrate it and say that it was simple. That's not it.
It's really kind of hard to do.
It is very difficult to do. One slight pitch off and you've wrecked the whole thing. So it's very musically difficult, but it's made to be a little bit simpler for the ear to decipher. You go later in the 60s and you have more, electric guitar, pounding drum beats, and all of that couples together with a raw voice. And to get these young women to do something that no one can imitate Janis Joplin. So that's why we're not trying to imitate anybody. We're trying to give an essence. But, you know, unless you smoke 2 packs a day and you down Southern Comfort like a fiend, you're not going to, and I don't recommend that for anybody, certainly not a student. So, you know, they're not going to sound that way, but they can still communicate the feeling of what was going on in our country in the late 60s when people were just ticked off at everything, ticked off at the government, ticked off at money going to the war, ticked off about
rights. Gosh, it sounds like today.
I know. What a head scratcher.
So have you kind of – but, you know, the whole thing is the reaction has been completely different. Our anger is gone in a completely different way. How do you tap into that to get an understanding of the times?
Well, the show doesn't really focus too much on the issues of the era as much as it does focus on the emergence of women. And we really haven't talked about this in a way, though I think we're touching on it in all kinds of different angles. The reality of the rise of not only of the electronic instruments that Michelle referred to, but also the influence of how the British brought back American blues into everybody's consciousness. You don't really get to Janis without all of that because the British said, wait a minute, there's something really fabulous going on here, you know. So I think the conversation that we're trying to have with the audience is about the era and about some of the things that changed throughout the era, but also the fact that, you know, at bottom, one of the huge differences between then and now is simply that most people were listening to the same music in that time period. It's not like it is now where there's 7,000 different kind of subgenres that I can't even begin to follow. I look at stuff on Rhapsody sometimes, and I think, what does this mean? You know, Elvis Costello, pub rock, what does that mean? I have no clue, you know. But, you know, everybody watched Ed Sullivan. Everybody listened to Aretha Franklin. Everybody knew Janis's lyrics, et cetera, you know. So I think the element we're talking about here, if anything, is that what's happened in this country has become a little bit more of a dispersal rather than a unification. And in the 60s, people saw that unification largely through the music. So it had that impact for sure.
My guest today, Michael Wright, who's co-directing along with Michelle Miller-Dill, who's also choreographing TU Theater's production of Beehive, the musical, which takes place this Thursday through Saturday at 8 o'clock and a Sunday afternoon matinee, all at the Lorton Performance Center on the TU campus. As we talk about their first production of the year, Beehive, this review of the 1960s featuring all girl groups. So this is all girls in the cast and everything.
Absolutely. And what we're trying to do with this season is look at the differences between what we can say through all female and then all male. When we get to the end of the year, Michelle is directing
Altar Boys,
which is an all male cast.
Oh,
so
okay.
We're really looking at, you know, different styles of performance and different notions of what the genders have to say to a certain extent, you know.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about something you brought up a moment ago, Michael, was this idea of this was a decade of women becoming empowered, and you have no further to do than listen to the music of this year where you start off with the Shirelles and the Chiffons looking for a man. And by the end of the decade, it's, you know, Aretha screaming about respect or Leslie Gore or all sorts of things where all of a sudden it changes. Although what's really interesting is the songwriters, except for maybe Carole King and maybe a couple other, the songwriters are still all men writing for women.
By and large, that's true. And let's not forget that Janis was still looking for a man. It's pretty much in every song.
Yeah, that's true.
That she did.
But it's still, is it a theme that you've explored at all, or is it really thinking too deep into a piece like this?
I think it's a theme that's innate in the show itself. I mean, it seems to me very clear that the differences, I've been working on selecting pre-show and post-intermission music to try to build us into the right spirit for stuff. And Frank Crystal's done a brilliant job with putting together some videos and music to go along with that or to go after that, et cetera. You know, and I've been thinking a lot about, well, what is the mindset that I want to create for the audience during their arrival? You know, they're coming in from wherever they've been on a Thursday evening, and now they're settling in to see a show. What are they hearing? What kind of things are influencing their thought processes? And then the show itself. And I think what the show invites is, first of all, just the great joy of what good music can do to you. Because I watch the show every night and take notes and all that, but I dance throughout the show in my seat. I'm just constantly bobbing up and down, and I just absolutely love it. And the voices are spectacular. I mean, we just have some incredibly talented young people in this show. But the other reality about it is that it does, for me at least, somebody who just went through their 50th high school reunion a couple of weeks ago, it does evoke all of the feelings of that era where the music of the 50s and the 40s, for example, didn't really question too much about what was going on around us. So that even what may seem kind of simplistic in a way, like the chiffons or like the Shirelles or whatever, they are actually questioning quite a few things about what's my role, what's going on, what's with him, how do I respond to him, all the things that go into that. And then as we get more political in the latter portion of the 60s, definitely. And I think people can draw from that as they wish. The show doesn't try to impose that in any way, and I didn't see any point in trying to do it. But I think they can definitely make some inferences from what they're seeing.
That's a good point, because when you think of like even the Shirelles and singing Carole King's music, it's like it's no longer just to get the boy. You had the boy. Am I going to keep the boy? Is the boy going to be around tomorrow?
Exactly.
You know, that
exactly.
sort of thing.
Yep.
Actually, I think one thing that's interesting about the show, the name itself, Beehive, I think people know what that refers to, is the hairdo. You can see the evolution of women through their hairdos in this particular show. And through their costumes, when we start off, we've got the little twin set and the cute little saddle shoes and
crinolines. I haven't seen crinolines since the era.
The first night that one of the actresses came out in saddle shoes, I thought Michael was going to go in raptures of delight over that. But they do start off with some big horror, as my mother would say, some big horror. And by the end, we have more natural hair. Cher with her long straight hair, Janice with her look, but the show just brings back memories. I was very young in the 70s, and I remember going with my mother to have her beehive done every Friday after work, and that sucker would last all week. And if it got in a rainstorm, oh my goodness, those little plastic bonnets that the women would wear over their heads.
Right.
This is going to bring back some memories for a lot of people.
How did you convey that to your kids in this, who are 20 years old, born, what would that be, 93? This is 30 years after the era. I mean, to dress like in the two set that you were talking about, I mean, that's just probably mind-blowing for
them.
Well,
they're used to Gaga, which has hair and a meat dress, so to wear a twin set and a crinoline's probably just a common day.
It's just another costume.
Well, maybe. I'll just put in, from my point of view as a professor watching my students come and go, what I find fascinating is the way the relationship that women have with their hair and with their clothing. I can pretty much tell what kind of day a given student's going to have if she shows up in PJs. I know she's just given up for the day, and I know I got to stay off her back if I'm going to ask her questions in class. I can't start pestering her about stuff because she didn't want to hear it. But when she comes in all dressed up, there's a whole other thing going on there. You know,
right.
And you can watch this going back and
too.
Forth. Yeah, absolutely. And I think in the era, I think the early 60s were about women still kind of maintaining a little girl thing. They'd been finally liberated from the big shoulders of the 40s and 50s and so forth. And the more extreme styles that were really kind of pulled in and, the tight pencil skirts and all that kind of stuff. And then it's kind of a little girl. And at some point they kind of said, well, maybe we don't want to do this anymore. And off we go from there.
Yeah, so. Eliminating that facade.
Exactly.
Well, they took the girls off. I mean, seriously, they
literally
took their girls off.
Yeah. Oh, I remember that vividly because it was like that was all part of the costume. And it was as restricting for them as it must have been to have been Scarlett O'Hara or something. Yeah, true.
I mean, we still have those same mores today. I was out somewhere and I had on a nice dress and an older lady came up to me and she berated me because I didn't have on hose. And I thought, I haven't worn hose since 1982. I don't do that.
You assume the role. You better assume the role correctly.
I didn't have my whole costume on.
Wow. Well, tell us a little bit about what we're going to see when we go to the show. Michael, you were alluding to sort of setting the mood. Now, does that take you back through music or is it more of some visuals that sort of put you in 1960 or 1961 or 59 or whenever?
Well, there's going to be, first of all, the set, which is beautiful. Kim Powers is our new scenic designer, and we're thrilled to have her with the faculty here. She's created a kind of a jewel box so that it can suggest a stage. In the early 60s, it can suggest a Dave Clark show. I mean, the
Dick Clark show.
Thank you.
So it would be like a set.
Exactly.
Like a television set.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so it can change quite a bit due to what happens with the lighting and so forth that goes into it. There's going to be a certain amount of projection, but it'll be more abstract and sort of about the feeling rather than saying, okay, this is something, a specific image we want you to look at and so forth. So there's that. I think the main energy that people are going to encounter with this show, again, is just this full out front looking at the audience, and everybody carries a hand mic. This is very different in that sense in this show. You know, there's no pretension of I'm wearing a Madonna mic or whatever, and you can't really see it, haha. But, you know, they're carrying hand mics and they're singing into those. And when there is dialogue, they're talking into the hand mics as well. So throughout the show, there's this definite awareness that it's a fully presentational thing. What I've loved so much about working with Michelle is that she taught me a lot about the difference between the choreography for the girl groups and the choreography for the boy groups. Because I had in mind they would all be spinning around doing all kinds of stuff. And she was like, no, it's a little bit more delicate than that. So, yeah, again, it's been a nice learning curve to be on.
Talk about the choreography for a girl group. I mean, when you think of, the Temptations, I think is what you're thinking of.
Exactly.
It's like, you know, where it's moving around. The girl groups were kind of like, it was more like a sway, wasn't it?
Well, it was. I watched a lot of footage, and I love the music from this time period, so this isn't the first time I've been exposed to it, but watched a lot of footage from the Sullivan Show and just different things that they did. And remember, they're on little spike heels. They're not even on solid character shoes that have a big old heel. They're teeny tiny spike heels, and if they move too fast, they're going to hurt themselves. Plus, the pencil skirts really keep movement down to a minimum.
That's right.
So I almost had in my head that there was going to be a lot of movement. And when I started doing research for this, I thought, they're just swaying. This is all about hands and being elegant. And then I thought of the whole Motown system, where a lot of these girl groups went through Motown. And they had people who taught them to walk and talk and how to comport themselves, because there was an image, and that image carried over onto the stage, where it was elegance and upright carriage. And then, of course, we all had to learn how to do the mashed potato, and we had to learn how to do the monkey and the jerk. And Michael was actually really instrumental in this, because I was doing a very clean, safe monkey, and he stopped everything. He goes, no, 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 and demonstrated for us how to do a proper monkey.
Yes, and we were also demonstrating that you can do the pony until you pass out.
Yes.
Because the whole show is, at least, well, the whole show, most of the show is the pony going on here and there.
All right. Give us a sense of the set, because, you know, during this time, I was just thinking of everything from what the set looked like on The Dating Game, going back to the early American Bandstand. And you have this whole art movement's going on, you know, pop art is showing up. Is this showing up in the show?
There's a degree of that, yeah. There are abstract shapes painted onto the set and onto the, that will be also represented within the projections themselves. And then the lighting is going to affect that in certain ways. So the whole set will change colors because of the way that the light is hitting it. It's all, the whole set is painted in kind of a neutral variations of gray, essentially, you know. But yeah, the idea was, how do we go from the early to the late 60s and not have specific symbols? And so what Kim came up with were these sort of pop art, slightly pop art kind of squiggles, you know. Mm-hmm. I think maybe this is more true to some of the abstract painters of the era than anything else. I think it allows the whole point of the show to really shine through, which is the singers and their movement and the presentation.
I was really struck by something you said, Michelle, about the comportment. You know, it's basically you're going from being a graduate of a finishing school to somebody like Aretha Franklin or Janis Joplin or somebody in that ilk in the course of this show, which means the whole movement thing changes for all of your singers.
Yes. And
drastically.
Nowadays, we look at it as you have this whole indie rock movement where they're not groomed by the major record labels. But people today, even people like Britney Spears and even Gaga, they're groomed by their record labels. That's a product.
And so was Janis Joplin, and so was Aretha Franklin. It was just a different sort of grooming to look the image.
Well, and with Janis,
still,
there's only so much that you can corral in with that. And most of that was go out and be wild. You know, it looks good if you're out and you're wild, because you're keeping up with the guys. You're keeping up with Jimi Hendrix. You're keeping up with the Doors. You're keeping up with all. And she went toe-to-toe with them, and we know her today because of that. You look at the girl groups, I can't really tell you, to be honest, and this is sad to say, I can't tell you who was in the Shirelles. I could tell you who was in the Supremes,
right. But
that's because of all the drama and Dreamgirls that came later, musical theater reference. But the girl groups, we get sometimes the Shirelles and the Chiffons mixed up. It's like, who are we talking, which fabric are we talking about today?
Right, exactly.
And they were distinct. But to us, it's more of an amalgam today. So that was one of the tricks with the show.
I want to touch on something you mentioned earlier. Said, you know, this is the sort of thing that your students are going to go out and do after graduation. You know, they may have to go if they're working in the trade show or something like that. You know, I mean, that I don't know if they still do those things now, but those sorts of events. And I was struck by the choice of this show versus something like Dream Girls. Now, Dream Girls is an all African American cast for the most part, so that may not work for the school. But the difference between taking a piece like that versus a piece like this.
First of all, this piece was brought to my attention by Susan Barrett, who's chair of our department. She had done it as an equity show several years ago. And right now, I have friends who are out performing in professional theaters. They're doing Beehive. They're doing the Taffetas, which is a 50s girl mm-hmm. group review. Mm-hmm. There are about three or four other Shout is the mod. It's the British girl group review. Mm-hmm. I could sit here and probably name, you know, handfuls of girl group reviews.
And this may be the first big professional experience in a show like this.
Yes. And this was one of the early ones. This was maybe the first girl group review that came about to celebrate that music. And then I think all the rest of them followed after. And you can look and there are boy group reviews as well. And we're doing a modern take on that, which is Altar Boys in the Spring, which is making fun of boy groups like 98 Degrees and NSYNC and those kind of things. So we're really looking forward to making fun of those. But the girl groups, people are fascinated by the 50s and 60s. They're fascinated by that time period. The music was really good. It's catchy. I wake up every morning with a different song in my head. It's annoying as heck. It's an earworm that you can't get out. And I have all the lyrics wrong. So I sing them, but all the lyrics are wrong. But people are going to leave this toes tapping, smile on their face, reliving some memories. This is what I told the cast. I said, you're just listening to this music and you haven't figured out why this is important. But there are people in the audience that courted to this music. There are people in the audience, their husband proposed to them in this particular song. There are people in the audience that did all kinds of things for the first time to this particular song. And they're going to remember that. And the people who never were exposed to this music are going to sit there and go, why didn't I know about this? This is great. Yeah. So it's really appealing for everybody, but it's historically important for our students.
All right.
And then as part of our training for the students, they get to do work in classical and contemporary and musical theater, book musical theater. But this is very different. And the reality that I'm seeing is that Broadway, in more ways than one, is becoming about jukebox musicals. There's a whole Janus thing that's going on right now, and there have been innumerable other ones, and it's going to continue for a while. And, you know, what we want more than anything else for our students is to be able to enter the profession successfully. And so that's the basis for the training as well.
All right. And we're going to have a great time doing it with Beehive. Michelle and Michael, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Michael Wright and Michelle Miller-Dill are co-directing the University of Tulsa's opening theater production of the season. Beehive the Musical opens Thursday evening at 8 o'clock with additional performances Friday and Saturday at 8 and Sunday afternoon at 2 at the Lorton Performance Center on the University of Tulsa campus. For ticket information, call the TU box office at 918-631-2567. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.